listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
One of the most eagerly anticipated books of the literary season is James Salter's latest novel, All That Is, partly because his previous novel was published more than 30 years ago. This one chronicles the life of Philip Bowman, a man who leaves the Navy after World War II and finds a job as an editor at a small publishing house. It's a minutely detailed portrait of his life as of an era in our cultural landscape now long gone. Knopf is the publisher, and I'm very delighted to welcome James Salter back to our show. Hello.
Hello.
Solo Faces, your last novel, came out in the late 1970s. You've published two volumes of stories, a memoir, books of travel and food writing. Had you abandoned the novel?
No, I hadn't abandoned it. I had thought of this novel. I had even started it, but I set it aside. And writing one thing or another, I was writing. And then at a certain point, about 10 years ago, actually, I picked it up again. And I said, I think I know enough now to finish this book. I'm ready to finish it.
Well, it's a book about a life, a long life. So at that point, you were in your 80s and you felt like you had a sense of how that works?
Well, I was almost in my 80s. Well, it's a book, it's the search for life's happiness, work, home, love, and I suppose you could say I wanted to see how it turned out. That would be perhaps romanticizing a little bit. You have a pretty good idea even when you're in your 50s how it turns out, but I felt authentic enough.
You chronicle the ups and downs of Bauman's emotional and romantic life in minute detail. And although he's always hopeful at the beginning, the relationship seemed to be doomed to fail. But then the book ends on a positive note. Are you now optimistic about the possibilities of finding real love?
You mean me personally?
Yes. Or at least as a writer.
Or Philip Bowman. Well, I think you're right. I think perhaps he finds the house and woman in the end. It doesn't end specifically, but the last you see of them, I think you have that idea.
Your novel, Light Years, which was published in 1975, is often cited by other writers as their favorite novel. Last night I mentioned that I was at a party that I was going to be talking to you today, and this woman said, "Oh my God, Lightyear is one of maybe my favorite book." And then I read that when it came out, the reviews were rather harsh. I've always wondered why that happens. Isn't something good, or did people, Anatole Breuard, just not get it?
Well, it wasn't Breuard who really was savage. It was another man who was ran the writer's program at Columbia. In any case, it's not unusual at all that a book is either rejected by publishers, many publishers, and is then published, and we recognize it as not only good, but in some cases great book. Beckett, I mean,
Well, Moby Dick had bad reviews.
Yes, initially. I mean, it's so common a story. And I would say some books get bad reviews, but then turn out to be a much read, a much admired, and perhaps even a very, very good book.
Well, did it have an effect on you at the time?
Yes, of course. I was depressed. I didn't go into treatment, but when the review came out, my editor, Joe Fox, at Random House, called. He said, "Well, I have the review from the Times, from the Sunday Times. Well, what's it like?" I said, "It's not good." What do you mean, not good? It's terrible. There must be something in it, though, some phrase or word that we can use that's praising. I mean, I don't know. And I said, and he said to me, "No, there's not.
Well, you're often described as a writer's writer. Does that description bother you, or do you see it as a compliment?
Oh, I mean, that's nonsense. I have lots of readers, people who like my work, who can't write worth a damn.
Well, I guess it's because people admire the way you write. You often pack a lot of information into what appears to be simple sentences. And there, sometimes I'll read one of your sentences and say, how the heck did he do that? Is it something that just flows, or is this because you just go back again and again until you perfect it?
Well, every writer goes back again and again.
Well, John Updike said he just used to start at the top of the page and keep on writing his miraculous sentences.
Who said that?
Updike, he said, in pen.
Well, I write in pen also. Well, the hell with him. I mean, I just don't know what to say. Most writers write and rewrite. Was he really that fluent?
Well, he took a while, he said. You know, he'd cross things out. But yeah, that would be it. It would be the draft.
You know, I flew on an airplane with him once, and I said, I love your reviews. They are inspirational to me because the detail in them and the knowledge of literature that's so deeply evident in them. How do you know all that? How do you research? How do you know all that? And he smiled a little and he said, "Well, I have a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica above my desk."
That's
my
it.
Desk. Well, you know, you never knew if he was telling you the truth or perhaps pulling your leg a little.
Didn't you rewrite two of your early novels when a publisher wanted to reissue them years after they had been originally published?
Well, I touched up The Hunters and the other book, which became Casada, I did considerable work on.
And The Hunters was made into a successful film with Robert Mitchum. Which led you to Hollywood. I want to talk about that later. But I want to get back to this novel.
Okay.
Can you tell us about your protagonist, Philip Bowman? Is he based on anybody you knew in the publishing industry?
He's not. This is not a figure from a live person from the publishing industry. I mean, I disclaim, as they do in all books, this is fiction. No characters are...
And but, it's definitely not autobiographical.
No, it's not autobiographical because obviously that's not me. There are some things that are the same. We were born in the same year, 1925. We were both born in New Jersey, but that's really about as far as it goes. I know editors over the past, say, second half of my writing career. I came to know a number of them pretty well. I admired their life, perhaps romantically. I don't know. I like the idea of what they were immersed in. They're reading, they're talking to other editors. They live a life of the intellect, but not academic intellect. They travel. I like their circle of friends. I like the fact that much of their life and business is conducted over meals, dinners, lunches often.
Well, that's what you're describing here in the publishing world of the post-war years. You think it's still happening? The parties, the trips to Europe to meet with publishers there?
Well, yeah, the answer is yes, but perhaps not in quite the same way. Publishing houses are smaller, of course. They might have a principal owner or family. The publishers generally since then have been consolidated or parts of large businesses, and I only assume that the responsibilities of editors and publishers are a little more seriously directed toward the major company. But I would say yes in general. It's an editor's life is still an editor's life. It's not the same editor's life.
When Bowman leaves the Navy after the war. He goes to Harvard, and then he tries to break into journalism, but he winds up as an editor in a small but reputable publishing house in New York. Was it easy to get into publishing then than into journalism?
Yeah. I mean, he just heard somebody needed somebody to read manuscripts. In those days, some of these publishers used to accept manuscripts mailed to them. Somebody had to read that. They used to read the first chapter, the last chapter, and a couple pages in the middle, and say, "We're awfully sorry that, at the moment we're." Somebody did that, not a highly trained person, and he happened to hear about a publisher who was looking for somebody to do that. He took it, and once you're in, it's like starting in the mailroom, so to speak. And he was a college-educated person. He liked it. He became an editor.
Do you think that is a good way to evaluate a novel? Reading the first pages usually does give you some sense of how the book is going to continue.
Well, if I don't know anything about the book or writer, that's the way I take a look at it. Read the opening, open the middle of the book, get a sense of it.
You also write some fairly explicit sex scenes here, something that you became known for in earlier novels, like A Sport and a Pastime. Wasn't it hard for you to find a publisher for that novel for that very reason?
I think they were somewhat cautious about it. A couple of publishers. Doubleday was certainly treated it gingerly. Harper Brothers was my publisher at the time. They turned it down. They said the characters aren't very interesting. It seems repetitious, this book. We're not going to publish it. I don't know what they really thought. I suspect they did not want to be associated with it.
And nowadays, I think those attitudes have changed. We even have the New Yorker publishing all of the four-letter words that Sean wouldn't publish. Many writers say that sex scenes are particularly difficult to do well. What are the problems for a writer?
With sex scenes?
Yeah.
Well, they say I write them well, so I don't
know. So you don't know?
No.
But you've read other people's. Do you cringe sometimes?
Well, they can be. I cringe more, actually, at sex scenes in the movies. If they go a little too far, I kind of avert my eyes, or I don't want to. Don't show me that. I have the general idea.
You give us detailed accounts of some of the minor characters' lives. Sometimes people only have tangential relationships to Bowman. Why do you think it's important to define even your minor characters so clearly?
I don't know. I think you like to read about them. I think life passes this way. You're interested in people, quite interested perhaps. Over time, that interest fades.
A recent article in The New Yorker described how you gave a neighbor a copy of your novel Light Years when it was first published, and she was shocked to discover it was about her own marriage.
That book was inspired by a couple that we were close friends with and had been for a couple of years, a marvelous family, actually. And so I did base it on them, and I suppose it's clearly them. I was more naive then, and it happened when the book was published. The book was written, perhaps 10 years after we had parted. We had moved to separate places and were friends but saw each other rarely, and I no longer saw their growing children who were my own children's age or saw them, but they were in my memory deeply, and it was from my memory I wrote this book. And when it was published, I was on Lexington Avenue with a fresh copy of it. I'd just come from Random House, and on the corner, who should I see but the very woman, Barbara Rosenthal was her name, and her daughter. And I had this book in my hand, and I was, I rushed up to greet them. I loved them, actually. And they said, what are you doing? I said, well, you want, here's the book. She said, it's my book. It's just published. I gave it to them. And they accepted it. And going home in a car, they were driving home, they started reading it. And, of course, it was soon evident who the figures in the book were.
And then the article implied that their marriage broke up partly as a result of the novel. It said you'd observed what they had not yet acknowledged.
Well, it didn't break up as a result of the novel, of course.
Yeah.
The seeds of breakup were evident, and I simply took it past what it all. I simply took it into the future.
You spent several years working in Hollywood, writing screenplays, directing films?
One film.
Why did you switch back to writing for the page?
Well, I had a chance to judge both of them, and one seemed more important than the other.
The Hunters was the only one that was made into a film? The only one of your novels?
Yes. A number of them have been optioned. But going from the option to the film is a process not always completed. Solo Faces is under option now and has been, and a script has been written, but that's still not that's far from being a film.
And that was published in 1978 or 79?
79.
So the usual question you ask at the end of an interview like this is, do you have something else in the works?
I hope so.
You have another novel?
No, I haven't started anything yet. I'm swept up in the excitement of having published this and having quite a surprisingly good reception.
Oh, the reviews have been fabulous.
Yeah, the New York Times review was staggering. It was.
That's because Anatole Breuillard is no longer there.
He was a right.
James Salter's latest book, with incredibly great reviews, is All That Is, and it is published by Knopf. Thank you so much for being with us again.
So nice being here again. Thank you.